guessing how many things fit into other things? When you jump into a pool, do you think, gee, how many standard-sized American green peas would fit in here? Have you wondered if you could beat an otter in a fair fight? If so, this show is for you. If not, tune out now. I'm begging you, tune out now. For the five people who are still listening, welcome to Inestimable. I'm your scorekeeper, Tony Sindelar. And while I worry about the professional and personal consequences of being involved in this endeavor, let me introduce your host and mine. Let me add, he's completely responsible for this entire concept, legally, ethically, and morally, Glenn Fleischman.
Hey, thank you, Tony. Yes, this is Inestimable, where a panel of contestants answer questions about things they don't know, but have to, estimate and compete against an audience of incomparable network members who are listening live to this narrowcast. Questions require answers in the forms of numbers, ranges, or comparisons. Knowledge may be rewarded, but sometimes it's punished. Now, here's how the scoring works. Tony, pay close attention to this. No, we discussed it at a time, I swear. Up to 5 points. Can be awarded in each round to each individual in whole integers. Yes, whole integers. They're awarded for proximity to the right answer, with bonus points if you're wrong in a funny way. Now, you know, these are sort of the whimsy points we discuss in other places, but we're looking for serious stuff here, folks. Paper and pen are or pencil are absolutely helpful, both for contestants and those playing along. So if you're listening in, pause and find your nearest writing apparatus, because it may help to write something down. Now, let me welcome this episode's panelists, who are definitely volunteers and were not forced to appear by contractual obligation. Shelley Brisbane.
Hello. I count one podcaster in this tiny little closet.
Oh, all right. Annette Weirstra. Hello.
Hello. I estimate that I'm going to be really great at estimating.
I believe in you. Anthony Johnston, welcome.
Hello, Glenn. I was counting on you being old school enough to use the term narrowcast. I love it.
I thought you might appreciate that. And Dan Morin, bienvenue.
Inestimable. You'll be hearing from my lawyers.
Oh, well, this was not cleared with legal. All right. So I've introduced the panelists in the order of play as determined by BB Edit's sort randomized feature. Eat it, random.org. Here's a song. Here's a song about BB Edit's feature composed by OpenAI. BB Edit's sort randomize. Oh, what a delight. Mixing, shuffling, making everything right. Organize, arrange in a blink. It's so clear. A feature so grand. Bringing order from sheer. It ends on that rhyme. I guess it forgot about chaos, but I did not. I never forget about chaos. Also joining us is an audience of incomparable members listening in via a live stream and who will be providing answers at the same time as panelists. Their answers will be averaged or normalized, and the audience could win the game. We love our listeners. Go to incomparable.com/members to find out more about becoming a supporter. I'll tell you more at the end of this episode. Okay, Tony, are you ready?
I mean, we're going to do this whether I'm ready or not, right? So this is just kind of a formality.
Well, by some definitions of ready, I guess. That's the real question. Can anyone truly be said to be ready? But
I've got a spreadsheet open, Glenn. With this, I believe I can conquer the world. Let's do it.
All right. If I give you a spreadsheet large enough, you can move the world, said Aristosthenes, maybe. Panelists and the audience, you're welcome to use calculators, but please don't look up constants like the speed of light. And also no Googling, binging, large language modeling, or AltaVistaing, please. Please keep your answers to your own brain.
AltaVista.
So any questions about how the game
Jeeves, can I ask
is
Jeeves?
Played?
I really want to do that.
Jeeves sadly was replaced by a pipe organ, as you'll find out in a second. Round one is called It's a Series of Pipes. Hey, it's a theme. So for round one, we talk about quantities of things that are more easily known. So for instance, I might ask, how many keys on a grand piano? We all know the answer is 88. Or at least I hope so.
Did we?
Well, now you do.
Yeah, that was an assumption.
You now know the answer is 88. But let's think a little grander than a grand piano. The largest pipe organ in the world is the Wanamaker Grand Court Organ, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, home of Scott McNulty and John Gruber, and the birthplace of democracy. So here's your question. How many pipes does it have? How many pipes does the Wanamaker Grand Court Organ have? Please use the Google form provided to enter your answer and select or enter your name as the case may be. How many pipes in the Wanamaker Grand Court Organ? So here are a few facts to help you. It's 7 floors tall. The pipes are organized in 464 ranks.
That'll help you, Dan.
It'll help you. It costs about $100,000 to build in 1904, which is the equivalent of $3.5 million today. It was built for the St. Louis World's Fair and opened late. After its debut, it went into storage for several years before it was reinstalled into what was then Wanamaker's, is now Macy's. Finally, and I thought this was kind of cool, as part of the reinstallation, John Wanamaker had a pipe factory built into the store so that he could add about 40% more pipes to form the current total. And he did that across the 1910s. So, all right, have people had enough time? Have I been blathered enough? People have answers to...
I know. Well, I was thinking. I've been thinking.
Please keep thinking. Tony and I will banter about things. We'll just cite random numbers aloud to make it easier.
Glenn, what are some of your favorite numbers that are also your social security number?
Well, wait a minute. Hold on. Oh. I see what you're doing there. My number starts, my social security number starts with a number between 1 and 9, and then it proceeds from there. I imagine
based on that information, I can determine that you were born.
My number was issued to me when I was an infant in New York State, and that is another clue to Glenn's social security number, which will be revealed at the end of this episode. Well, okay, so all our answers, and it looks like I think we have answers from the... from the audience are all in. So Tony, what's the audience average? I'm curious.
So I've taken the audience responses and I have averaged them. And, you know, this is one of those great things where people can put in very big numbers and very small numbers. And they average together to what we call a medium number. And that medium number representing the audience's average is 11,970. You know, they didn't want to go 12,000. That's just like, that's too many. But 11,970 pipes. How do you like those pipes?
That's a pretty good number. Now, I guess the question is, at what point do I reveal the answer? I don't know.
It's really your game.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well, that's confusing. So Shelley, you put in 46,400. I have a suspicion of how you came up with that number. Would you like to share it?
Yes. I just took the number of ranks and I did a thing they call multiplication.
Interesting. This is an interesting strategy. Now, everybody except Shelley put in an answer below 2,000. Dan at 1,472, Anthony at 1,530, and then at 1,305, Tony, I need to reveal the actual answer. The answer, what's the average of the final answers from panelists? What was their average?
The final answers of your panelists averaged out to 12,677, you know, a nice, almost 1,000.
This is like Spider's George. This is, you know, there's one massive outlier.
Indeed.
And Annette has swallowed more organ pipes than anyone else in America. It's true. It's very difficult, but she managed it. So the average from the panelists is slightly higher than that of the audience. Well, the actual number is 28,750 pipes and 464 rings. It does seem rather implausible, but that's the number.
Are some of them like 6 inches long?
Well, yeah, some are really tiny, like piccolos, and some are like, floors tall.
And even though I multiplied them, I assumed that they get smaller and the number gets smaller as you go upward, but I didn't have anything else to go on. So I
just were the only person to go over, whereas basically everybody else was way under Shelley.
Well, and we were under by more than you were.
By
over,
a lot. So, by what we call a lot.
This round was scored on closeness. And
Glenn, about this scoring system here.
It's not Price is Right rules.
I hope not.
Glenn, I think, you know, people may get some bonus points here because I believe based on the scoring system Glenn devised, no one gets any points, Glenn. Is that what I'm saying?
Let's be a little kinder in this round, which is I think Shelley's going to get 3 points for coming within, an order of magnitude of it. Everyone else is going to get 1 point, including the audience, because I think, trying to think along these lines, I don't want to be that unfair to start out. Sure. I'll be unfair
later.
When you
give everybody 1 point, it really just makes it meaningless. It's like, it's classic grade inflation.
Exactly. Well, Shelley didn't get a point. So I want to call it Jackson member, and a comparable member Jackson, who is the closest with 30,000 was Jackson's guess. So Jackson gets an extra bonus
Ghost
point,
points,
but the audience doesn't. I'm sorry, Jackson, it's your personal point. It'll be sent to you through the mail. It'll arrive 75 weeks later, damaged and ripped to shreds.
I think we should point out, I see Robot MLG 20,000.
That's pretty good. It's
close. That's very good. It's within than Jackson. So
no, Jackson was just 1,250 higher.
Did you know that numbers have numbers beyond the first digit?
Unaware of that. Well, the next round will be much better. But Tony, where are we on scores?
Don't promise things you can't. Yeah.
Glenn.
I think a score update would be fabulous because it's hard for us to calculate at this point on our own.
Yeah, it is. These are not estimates. These are in calculations, and you'll be excited to know that Shelly is in the lead with 3 points. But right behind Shelly, it's anyone's game. Hot race for second place here. Annette, Anthony, Dan, and of course, audience at 1 point. Anything could happen. I hope something does.
Something must happen. They must be giants. Let's get this going with round two, which is called Der Kommissars in Town. So it'll make sense.
How do you spell that?
Yes, it'll make sense. It will.
You keep saying things.
In this round, we're considering Billboard's year-end Hot 100 singles back in history. History is now shockingly close to when I went to high school, which I really don't like that. That's history now. When I was born is ancient history. So this is terrifying. So this round, you will guess the ranking of a song from 1986 on Billboard's year-end Hot 100 singles in the United States. And that song that you will need to guess the rank of is Rock Me Amadeus. So let me give you some more data first. First, we're going to score this very reasonably. You'll get a point if you're within 20 positions of the rank. So you really want to give some points out. But you can get up to 5 points for being perfectly right. So there's a range of points available the closer you are to it.
It is the Billboard 100.
Yes.
So 100.
Not 125.
Or less.
There were no bonus points where they went above it, and no one got a negative score.
There's no Billboard, the worst song of the year. In fact, people returned 20,000 copies of this album.
That is on a different scale. That's not on the Billboard 100. Yeah.
So this was Falco's only number one Billboard Hot 100 hit. It reached that position in the weekly charts on March 29th, 1986, just before I graduated high school for those working on identity theft. But let's take a step back. That's the question, is what rank did it hit across that entire year? So Billboard's year-end Hot 100 singles is the average rank for the entire year for a song. So they release 100. Each week they release rankings. And at the end, like, this is the best songs of the year by ranking and or by sales figures. And this is the position. So it was number one for just 1 week during that year. It did well at other times. So you're trying to figure out, you know, where did it sit? So Falco was also known for his less popular Der Kommissar, which, Tony, did you know that Der Kommissar in English is the Kommissar? I know it's hard to translate.
I did not know that.
Well, so the lyrics in the German version, if you translate them to English, include, "Hey man, wanna buy some stuff, man? Did you ever wrap that thing, Jack?
No.
So wrap it to the beat."
No, thank you.
Mm. Yeah. Der Kommissar did not chart as well.
He was inspired by the Sugar Hill Gang and ripped off the lyrics as a result. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Oh, that's interesting. That's very funny.
Won't help you.
You don't get any points for that, but you get
I know admiration. Too much about Falco.
Ghost points.
Gets points if we sing it.
I don't think I ever expected to hear that phrase in my life. I know way too much about Falco.
I don't know about Falco from Star Fox.
Dan, I like how you know a lot about Falco from Property that I say quizzically. Maybe I don't know that much.
Nope, I just expended it.
One of my most coveted Christmas gifts this year was a Falco Live DVD.
Really?
Some idea.
Oh, my God.
This game is rigged, what I'm saying.
You totally know the answer, then.
No, I don't, because this is the American chart.
That's right.
You got a terrible version of the song over there. It was awful.
I'm going to give you, here's what a fact is, that there are apparently 17 distinct versions of Rock Me Amadeus, which is shocking.
All by Falco.
The American one is the worst because it does not actually feature Falco at all.
What? No, that's great.
Is Anthony now the host of this show?
This show is transitioning into unjustly maligned Falco edition.
Or UK Triv or any number.
I'm with you.
I have a little bit more data to give you. I want to tell you a couple more things. So
are we
going to
find out that Anthony wrote the Falco graphic novel here?
Anthony Falco. You know?
So the top five in 1986, the top five of the chart were That's What Friends Are For, Dionne and Friends, Dionne Warwick, Gladys Knight, Elton John, and Stevie Wonder. Number two was Say You, Say Me, Lionel Richie. Number three was I Miss You by Climax. Now, let me spell that. K-L-Y-M-A-X-X. I Miss You by Climax. Number 4, On My Own, Patti LaBelle and Michael McDonald. And number 5, Broken Wings by Mr. Mister. Just above Rock Me Amadeus was Take My Breath Away by Berlin, which is ironic, I guess. And just below was Papa Don't Preach by Madonna.
Oh. Just a little hint there. Glenn just gave you the top 5. So if you answer 1 through 5, you're not paying attention.
That's right. That's right. I'm giving hints. That's why you gotta listen.
So never submit early is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. I also want to provide this fact, which is Bananarama was the 3rd entry that year that had AMA, AMA in its name, was 38th with Venus, which is actually, I like that song quite a lot.
So don't put 38 either.
Don't put 38. See, I'm giving hints left and right. The 100th ranked song that year was Stevie Wonder, Go Home. And number 50 was Amanda by Boston, which I vaguely remember. All right, so people, you can submit your ranks at any time now, if you have not already.
There is such a thing as too much data, and I think it's what Glenn just gave us.
That's, you know, that's part of the challenge of this. Everyone, panelists, members, Max in the audience noted that as a German, this is all hilarious to them.
that's true no matter what we're talking about,
it's
though,
true.
I think
yeah, we're
right.
Very funny in German.
We're very funny. That's, well, there's the
we're
episode
big in
title.
Germany.
There's the episode title.
Look at these
very
stupid
funny
Americans.
Very funny
and
in Germany.
Canadians. And Brits.
Thanks.
Yeah. I've got more title. Answers. Are these final answers, or do people need to update their numbers based on new information?
I'm sticking with my original wild guess.
I'm sticking with mine.
I think we have audience responses, too. Are we ready to go? Tony, I think I have this right. The average rounded down of the panelists' guesses is exactly right.
Yeah, that is the wisdom of 4 people.
It's incredible. So I'm going to take the unprecedented move of screwing up your score sheet. Everyone's going to get at least 1 point for that. Woo-hoo. Maybe get a bonus point even, because that's kind of amazing. That proves the whole point of this
game.
Again,
when you give everybody a point, it's kind of meaningless. But I guess you're not giving
but
the audience
not being
a point.
At zero
the audience
makes
was
me feel good.
Way off. Audience
the
way
audience
off.
Average is way off.
This,
yeah.
All right, this whole game is kind of meaningless. I mean, let's be honest.
Well,
I mean, life itself, if we're going to go that far.
Yeah, that's the point, you know, extrapolate that out to all of our lives are meaningless. How do you like that?
I mean, listen, I was finding meaning in this whole experience, but apparently
yeah,
I shouldn't.
We're just trying to have... Anthony, keep it light.
I'm bringing chaos to order to chaos. You just have to remember that at all time.
Yeah.
It's a layer of chaos on top of our teeming multitudes. So let's go through the answers. So Shelley was at ranked number 15, Dan 27, and then Anthony and Annette at 35 and 36. All of these were remarkably close. The average you came up with for your 4 scores was 28.25. The answer is 28th rank. So that is amazing that with 4 people. Now, the audience was way off. There was there were a couple of Gregor Georges there, Spider Georges and Georgs, and they came in at 41. So there were a couple outliers that put it off, but it was a remarkably popular song that year.
Wait, so the correct answer was 28, correct?
28 was the correct answer. It was also the average. 28.25 was the average of panelists.
I know there were points available if we were within 20, but like nobody got it exactly.
No one was exact. You were within 1.
I was within 1.
You get 4 points for being
nice.
At number 27.
I just want to make sure I got points. That's
you
literally
get
point.
Oh, you get 4 points for that. Tony, yeah. It looks like everybody gets good points on this round of some kind.
If you consider points good,
points might be good in a universe without morality, sure. So
Anthony and Annette were pretty close. They were within 10, so they get 3 points. And Shelley, I believe, is within 15, so
that's
2
correct.
Points for Shelley.
All right, that's
now,
great.
The audience, I believe, is also within 15.
That is correct. They are. They are just within 15
points.
So audience
gets 2 points.
All right, good work, audience. Mm-hmm. Well, that was a chaotic round, much more so than I ever expected, which means everything's going fine.
It only gets worse from here.
Maybe we'll find out. We'll find out. The next round will tell us the answer. Tony, is there a score update available with all that information provided?
There is.
Could you provide it?
Yeah.
Well, that's a rhetorical question.
I don't want to rush you.
I answered the question I was asked.
You were.
It is very exciting because Shelley and Dan are tied for first place at 6 points, but Annette and Anthony right behind with 5 points. Audience also playing with 3 points.
All right. Good work. All right, here we go. So round 3 is coming up. It's called We Make It Up in Volume. And this game is about guessing the volumetric space of things with using other things to guess their space. So let me give you a specific example. We're going to talk about the International Space Station, when you look at the ISS, and you can look at it because it passes overhead a number of times per day because it's zipping around really fast around the Earth, it's often made more approachable as a thing by providing analogies to the space it occupies. So it's as big as a six-bedroom American house. It's the length of an American football field. The internal habitable volume is roughly equivalent of 1/6 of an Olympic-sized, not American, swimming pool. That's all well and good. But what we really want to know is, and hold your answers off until we talk a little more about this, because you're going to want to hear some detail, how many American Mars bars would fit inside the International Space Station? In wrappers, please. How many American Mars bars? So I got to call that out. This is a pants in the boot side call out. And some of the folks in this podcast participated in our member special in which we ate candy from around the world. And so it's a fun fact that American Mars bars and Mars bars in the rest of the world are two different things.
Now, well, it's a fact.
It's a fact. Well, it's fun. I don't know. So Anthony can help me with this. But let me. This is what I was able to determine with my extensive research is the U.S. version is nougat and toasted almonds covered in milk chocolate. The U.K. and the worldwide version is nougat and caramel coated in milk chocolate. In the U.S., the Milky Way bar is similar, but not identical, to the U.K. Mars bar. In the U.K., you can buy a U.S. Mars bar, but it's called a Mars Almond bar. Meanwhile, a Milky Way outside the U.S. is more like a Three Musketeers bar in the U.S., a nougat center coated in milk chocolate. Anyway, that's been Pants in the Boot. We'll be back next. Oh, sorry, I got in the wrong script here. So, I don't know. Let's see if that. I don't think any of that helped. But we really want to know is how many American Mars bars of the current popular selling variety would fit inside the ISS.
I think the thing that might trip me up is I don't know what size. I mean, not just in terms of, you know, accurate volume, but I mean, I literally couldn't even ballpark how big your Mars bars are.
That's what's holding me up too. It's definitely not because this is an impossible task.
Anthony, if you think about how big a candy bar is, the plus on how different the US and UK versions is probably not going to make a difference.
That could be the difference between like 20 or 30,000, you know, units in this thing.
Yeah. I mean, if it's like, you know, if it's like a slab of concrete sized, then yeah, that might be some problems.
What did you say the internal volume was, Glenn?
Well, I will reveal this information. It's as big inside as a six-bedroom American house.
That was it. Yeah. Yeah. No, which doesn't really help, does it?
Yeah, well, American houses, as everybody knows, are 15,000 times larger than British houses.
I don't like where a six-bedroom American house is also the size of an American football field. That makes me uncomfortable with that.
That's well, they say no. It's the length of it. Yeah, actually, if you have to array the American house rooms a lot because it's the length of an American football field.
Oh, okay,
so it's arrayed a little differently.
You're telling me our houses don't look exactly like the International Space Station?
Mine does.
Oh, well,
I have a very long, narrow.
We're talking
house.
About American houses.
I'm sorry. Are they Canadian Mars bars?
What do you get in Canada? Do you get the British or the...
I think we get the British version, but I don't eat a lot of Mars bars, but I think ours has caramel in it.
So, all right. So here's where we're at. Nobody got really close to the answer in among the panelists, but actually everyone was not absurdly far off, like in the terms of the scheme of things, like wasn't off by factors of 100, let's say. But orders of magnitude. But here's the hilarious part is the average of the panelists' answers is within a very small percentage point of what I calculate as the actual answer. So if you calculate the rough dimensions of a Mars bar in America, the dimensions work out to be...
Glenn, you're supposed to calculate the dimensions of the Mars bar in space.
Oh, in space. I'm sorry. Well, it does expand a little, as we know, like your spine. So the rough dimensions are about 33 cubic centimeters, right? Okay. So that said, if you then divide that number into the 388 cubic meter volume of the ISS, you get 11.9 million. That number didn't seem right to me. So I ran it a few more times to make sure. And it's true. It's just you can stack a lot of Mars bars inside of apparently a six bedroom American house. And that's probably an upcoming reality show is how many Mars bars can you fit in this house? Well, the answer is almost 12 million. So the average answer of the panelists was 11.6 million, and the answer I came up with was 11.9 million, which is amazing.
Wow. You say we weren't that far off, but I remember my answer, and I think that's still fairly far off.
I'm pretty off.
I was quite far off.
Dan, your answer? Not great.
It wasn't 100,000, and it wasn't a billion, so I think that's pretty good. And in the comparable member guessed 12 million, which is pretty incredible. Oh, and Steve V guessed 14 million. So we have a couple people. Oh, and we have a 22 million from Jared. So we've got people who are fairly in the ballpark with it.
And then there's some people whose keyboard seems to have been stuck on zero.
So the audience, Tony, what was the audience average? So the correct answer average
is, I believe I calculated the audience average at 397,752,572 Mars bars, which is a lot of Mars bars. I mean, my math would take a good number of international space stations to assemble.
If you put them all end to end, would they reach the moon and back?
I did do that number somewhere and I've lost it. So there you go. I want to point out Robot MLG in the member chat also. 10 million. I was misreading the decimal points there. So 10 million.
If you expressed it as a number of millions, less than 20 million, you were pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I feel.
It's pretty good. It's always
no points for that, but pretty good.
Yeah. So let's. So Tony, how are we scoring this game? We said we didn't tell people.
Why do you keep asking me that?
You are the scorekeeper.
Yeah, I write down numbers you say. Read my contract.
So we were going to score it by percentage closest, but again, it's hard for me to say when all four panelists get the number that's almost exactly right. It's hard for me to want to say that each panelist was that wrong because they contributed something greater than themselves. But let's see. So we would score this typically. Our goal was to score it by percentage. So if you were within 10%, you get 5 points. If you're within 50%, you get 1 point. Now, nobody was within 50%, but I would like to give...
Shelly is closest.
Yeah, I'd like
Shelly
to give...
Shelly is closest, once again.
Shelly was closest. I think she should get 4 points because that's awfully good for a random guess. And Annette, so Shelly had 19 million. Annette had 23,583,675. Thank you. And that's the next closest. I would like to give Annette 3 points. And I would like to give Dan.
That was remarkably specific in it.
Yes. Well, you know, it's not going to be an exact number.
And I would like to give Dan and Anthony, who had 2,120,046, just to be precise, and Anthony with 1.5 million. If we round that up from pounds to dollars, that's 2 point. No, I said. But I think they are within the realm of reasonable stretching, and I would like to give them 1 point each. Tony,
1 point to Anthony, 1 point to Dan.
The audience gets nothing on this round. I'm sorry, we love us.
We're way off.
You're nothing,
so
audience.
Far off.
Nothing.
So far off. So tell me when you're ready, but let us do a hey scores.
Annette gets 3 points. Anthony gets 1 point. Shelly gets 4 points. Dan gets 1 point, and audience, so sorry, 0 points. Let's look at how that affects the total scores. Shelly continues to be in the lead with 10 points. Annette, close behind at 8. Anthony at 6. Dan, 7. You think I would have read that between 8 and 6, but I didn't. And audience at 3 points.
All right. Audience was, there's still room to catch up because we have other things that will happen.
Can you
here.
Tell why I mainly run game shows and don't do the scorekeeping?
Round 4.
I was like, there's only 6 rounds. How long could this take? We could be done
3 hours later.
You are bad at estimating how long these things take, Tony.
Tony gets 0 points for estimating. All right, so here we go. Round 4. It's the title of this round is Just 92 More Things, Ma'am. So the Columbo TV show featured a lot of murders and other deaths. I'm going to give you 2 statistics to start with. And I will give you some other answer or some other data as we go along. But I'm giving you 2 statistics to start with. 69 episodes, 92 fatalities. But, and here's the question, how many of those 92 fatalities in numbers, not percentages, numbers, absolute numbers, were by bludgeoning? Now, Tony, you had pointed out maybe everyone doesn't know what bludgeoning means. So let me define it specifically. It's death by being hit by an object like a lead pipe or candlestick or a bludgeon, for instance. So how many of those 92 fatalities were by bludgeoning? Now, here's a little data. If you want to wait and answer, I can give you a little information about the other deaths.
I'll wait.
Let's play a mini game. There's no points for this. But how many people do you think died in a plane crash across those 69 episodes?
3, 4. Yeah.
0.
Well, it was 2. It's 2 people. Very low. Huh? Stabbing, shockingly, just 2 people. Shooting, obviously the number one cause of death.
USA.
And I'm not going to tell you the number because this is give something away, but shooting is number one. The Columbophile, a great site, listed 16 categories plus 5 deaths in the other category. And I like, I don't know, is smothered by an otter? I don't know. Like, what the other kind of bored to death
by
Columbus?
I would be really sad if I was murdered and then my murder only merited the other category. That's disappointing.
The one episode where like something turned out the murder victim just had a heart attack.
Oh, that's right.
They're not really a murder victim then, Dan.
Well, I don't know. Columbo caused it.
I think that's the point. Like, Columbo could be looking for the murderer and find one and then realize that they died of a heart attack, maybe because they were scared.
So just to refresh, Glenn has told you that there are 92 fatalities.
92 fatalities.
And has given you some other numbers of things that are not part of that 92.
Not part of that 92.
If you answer a number that is above 92, we will send people to your house.
There's also a bonus question from the members is, what percentage of Tony died? Per episode, so let's
so let's, I don't really look forward to these, and I'm concerned about my part, what part of my brain is like,
that was the first part of your game that we killed, Tony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there's a large part of my brain that forgets how these go as some kind of protective measure.
Oh my gosh. Well, we're starting to get answers coming in. Somebody use that Google Sheet. No units required. You don't have to select bludgeoning from a pop-up menu. That would be very macabre.
Metric equivalent of bludgeon. Could.
Remarkably, there's no one has come in, and I think, yet with the precisely correct answer,
though
a few people are close, but someone came in with the exact answer to a different category, which I find remarkable.
Which is really just a different number.
It's a different number, but it's exactly the number. Are all our answers
exactly
again,
the
looks
right
like,
wrong number?
I used
number.
To think the game show that I ran was sometimes chaotic, and I realize now that I prepared a lot.
Well, you know, this is all me.
Inconceivable is a bastion of order.
I guess, is it that
this.
I don't have a Glenn? Is that what's doing me a
this
favor?
Is the inside of my brain.
It is,
100%.
Glenn, some exciting news. I've averaged the audience numbers, and I have averaged the panelist numbers, and those averages are actually really close. They're within basically rounding, they would be the same number. But that number is very wrong.
It's very wrong. It's very wrong. Indeed, it is very wrong. But the good news is we have some people who came in with numbers that are reasonably close. Let me reveal first the wrong answer to, or the right answer to the wrong question. So Annette, I want to give a whimsy point, but I want to add 1 point to Annette's score because I think based on our scoring method, she's not going to get any points. I'm sorry. But I am going to give her a point for the correct answer. To the number one cause of death in Columbo by shooting is 38, and Annette said 38. So I kind of feel like Annette needs to get a point for that because that's just an amazing stroke of luck.
And you shoot with 38s on some occasions.
And it was luck, not skill.
It's incredible. So Annette gets 1 point for that. Now, the correct answer, so let's say the average answer, Tony, what was the panelist and the audience average answers?
The average answer of our panel was 22.75, which I'm just going to call 23 because you can't 0.75 murder someone.
Well, you could get shot and recover, I guess, but or bludgeoned.
But
and
this
recover.
Is bludgeoning.
Oh, that's true.
And the average of the audience was 23.5, which I'm going to call 23. Everyone feels, I think, as a group collectively, all you people feel like 23 people got bludgeoned.
Like a quarter of people in Columbo got bludgeoned.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, it's shockingly, it's only 12, which, you know, I guess it was made too gruesome to appear in too many episodes.
Not as gruesome as shooting people.
I guess
blood.
Shooting is just bang and then they fall down. I guess there's no blood.
But
bludgeoning somebody
shows. Bludgeoning is just picking up a heavy ashtray and whacking somebody over the head with
a vase.
Isn't it?
Hit somebody with a vase.
This is a candlestick kind of podcast.
Or a vase.
Now we're going to rank our preferred methods of murder in our lifetimes.
I'll have you talk to my lawyer again.
This podcast for entertainment murder purposes only.
So Shelley was closest with guessing 15 people were bludgeoned. That was only 3 away. Dan guessed 8 people. That was 4 away. So because both of them were within 4 deaths, they get 3 points each, Tony. So Dan and Shelley get 3 points each. And I'm afraid Annette with 38 and Anthony with 30 are too far away for points. So no points in this round. And also, sadly, the audience at 23, I think they're outside the range. They are. So no points to the audience this round. This is a hard round, I realize. But this means you have to watch and memorize Columbo. It'll never come up again, thankfully.
Not as hard as that bludgeon.
Not as hard as that flesh. Bag of oranges next time. Tony, have you had enough time to update the scores?
I believe I have. Let's see if I've done it correctly. I calculate that Shelley
continues to lead at 14 points. Dan behind at 11 points. Annette at 9. Anthony at 6. Audience, it's been a couple rounds since they scored any points. They are at 3. But audience, anything could happen, but probably not.
This game is, I thought this game was going to prove the wisdom of the crowds, and apparently it is disproving it. But individual audience members did get relatively close. We had several people who were within a few or 5 or 6. They would have gotten points as panelists, but sadly,
yeah,
as
the total. Yeah, RTD2, 13, one off. That's a great number. RTD2 plays our game? That's great.
I know, it's exciting. It's amazing.
Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep. He's a robot. I mean, yeah, he should be pretty good at it.
Yeah, well, the author one classic computing error.
Well, so now we're moving on to round 5. This is the penultimate round. And then
this is the one that I am not looking forward to scoring.
This is the round.
You mean you were looking forward to the others?
It was.
How many Columbo murders were by scorekeeping?
I thought you were going to say scorpion, and I was like, there must be at least one, right?
Gotta be.
That's under other.
Moving on to round 5. This round is called Bigger Than a Bread Box, Smaller Than the Known Universe. So, as Tony may have hinted at, nobody likes this round. When I tested the game, this round was the least.
Keep doing it.
It was the least favorite by far. The panelists didn't like it. The audience didn't like it. Tony threatened to report me to the podcast authorities. But anyway, here we go. So, put the following 5 seals in order by how large they are on average.
How many seals are you? There's only 5.
5 seals.
We couldn't afford 7 seals.
We couldn't afford seals. Oh. 7th seal is not permitted. Leopard seal, harbor seal, ringed seal, elephant seal, Weddell seal.
More tricky, one of those seals is made up, but he's not going to tell you which one.
I hate to tell you, they're all real seal.
And we want these, Glenn, from...
Yes, from largest to smallest, identify these seals by their species. And of course, we're looking at average weight. So there are ranges of weights for each of these, but they do tend to range within a specific orderment. And they're talking about weight.
Orderment? That's not a word. I don't know.
Isn't the grammar podcast.
Right. And the weight of the seal, not the length, which is typically proportionate. The
weight of a seal, largest to smallest. Is what
largest seal first, smallest seal last. That's largest
like
by
a nice
weight.
Saturday afternoon where I have to average seal list for people.
You could have been arranging cockfights, and this is what you chose instead.
This is how I make a living.
Is it?
Wait, you're getting paid?
Tony, we need to talk about that.
Or ranking, you know, averaging seal ranks is its own reward.
What is a Weddell seal? I've never heard of it.
I've never heard that one.
Well, you know, before I did this, I didn't either.
Would you like some fun facts about the Weddell seal?
Oh, yeah. Please. Sure. Facts.
Do they include its weight?
Well, wait a minute. I'm extracting all of the facts that are about its size from this list of things.
There are no facts about the Weddell seal.
It is an abundant true seal with a circumpolar distribution surrounding Antarctica. It was perhaps not too surprisingly discovered by a British sealing captain named James Weddell.
How lucky was he? He's like, goes out there, I'm like, I'm a sealing captain. Oh, I found a new seal.
And it's named after me. What are the chances?
This guy, you can tell kind of what kind of guy this is, because you know where he discovered it? An area of the ocean now known as the Weddell Sea.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's also the inventor of sealing wax, as I understand it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he, you know, true seal, not like one of those fake seals, though.
What is a fake seal? Is it like a seal dressed, is it like a selkie, or is it like another animal dressed like a seal? Or is it a bee? Is it a bee that looks like a seal? It's got color, you know, different colors.
I've got an actual answer here for you. It's not that exciting. Well, I mean, it's exciting in that it's true and real. So true seals are earless because they lack external ear flaps. Eared seals are sea lions, which are not true seals. So they've got ears. Ears versus not ears is how you tell if a seal is a liar or not. So we've reached the Tony Reads Things from the Internet portion of the podcast. There are other somewhat subtle differences between the front flipper of two groups, but the hind flipper differences are noticeable. All right, I really hope people have put in seals. And we're waiting on Shelley for some quality seal information.
Shelley, we're waiting on your seal of approval.
Well, I just realized, audience members for whom English is not their native language, it turns out this question is completely unfair because they don't call seals this anything like these names in other languages. So my apologies to audience members for, of course, that makes sense because, you know, hegemony of language perpetuates taxonomy. I don't know, something like that.
I didn't come here to learn anything.
Let's start.
I have to say, I'm actually
Well, I was going to say impressed, and then I looked at the answers again. Never mind. I'm just
Now the school almost tries to make you better.
I am impressed by one thing that I believe in Glenn's scoring system isn't worth much.
That's fascinating.
I think we've got four. We've got four panelists. I do not have the ability to run an average on these audience responses.
We'll just be talking for a little while.
It seems like the main thing here that is going to determine scores is people's ability to know/guess information about the Weddell seal.
It's true. That's the wild card seal. Hey, so this would be a great time to ask people about their current projects. Anything they'd like to promote? Books or other projects or podcasts or what have you. Let's start with Shelley. Shelley, what do you host here on the Incomparable Network, and what would you like to tell people about yourself?
Wow, Glenn, I'm so glad you asked. Right here on the Incomparable, I host Lions and Towers and Shields and Weddell Seals. I don't know. It is a podcast about classic film, which will be returning in early March for a spring season. I am also the author of iOS Access for All, a book about accessibility on the iOS platform. Thanks for asking, Glenn.
How would someone find your accessibility book? Is there a website for it?
Someone would find that at iosaccessbook.com.
I own a very fancy copy of it myself, so thank you very much. Annette, would you like to talk about podcasts and projects that you're involved with?
Sure. I just started season 4 or 5 of Agents of Smooch, and this month it is our 4th birthday. We've been doing this for a long time, which is kind of amazing. And
congratulations.
For our birthday episode, I got to interview a screenwriter of an upcoming Hallmark movie called Paging Mr. Darcy, and she was delightful, and it was very fun to get some inside scoop on Hallmark movies. So that dropped yesterday, and the movie Paging Mr. Darcy drops today. So,
oh my gosh, I saw that pop up in my feed and was like, wait, what is this? This looks exciting. So I will tune that in. Thank you, director, Agents of Smooch, and Anthony. I know we no longer have Unjustly Maligned to look forward to at the moment because you are very busy with a million projects. What is something or things you would like to talk about?
Well, so here on The Incomparable, I occasionally host UK Triv, another game show in this feed. And actually, I needed to get around to doing another one pretty soon. I think it's been a while. Elsewhere, I host a heavy metal podcast called Thrash It Out, which you would think by its nature of subject would be more chaotic than a game show on The Incomparable.
Nope.
But actually is kind of a model of order compared to this show. And then I write a series of murder mystery books called the Dog Sitter Detective series. The first book, The Dog Sitter Detective, is now out all over the world. The second book, The Dog Sitter Detective Takes the Lead, is out everywhere except North America. Sorry.
What?
But you can get an ebook and audiobook, just not physical copies.
It's like you can get
copies.
The ebook because I have it.
Yeah. But it does not feature any seals, even though the second book does take place on the water.
How about bludgeonings? Oh,
you
not tell us that.
Spoilers.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That is a spoiler.
Thank you, Anthony. I actually need to catch up on the second in that. This is a series, so that means a third is in the work? Is disclosed, correct?
A third and a fourth. I'm writing the third at the moment, and I'll be starting on the fourth at the later in this year.
This is fabulous. I'll be looking forward to your meeting the Agatha Christie number someday far into the future.
Oh, God.
Is that a curse? It might be a curse. Dan, I think you may have some projects that would be interesting for this audience to listen to. Know about.
Nope, nobody cares. That's not true. I host many, many podcasts here on The Incomparable, some more frequent than others. Our podcast covering Star Wars TV shows, A Complicated Profession, returns later this month for a new season as we cover the third and final season of The Bad Batch. You can also find Biff here on The Incomparable, a show that will shortly be celebrating its 9th anniversary, if you count its its backlog, where it originally started as a TV show. But the same group of people have been talking on that show for 9 years. I am also a writer, like Anthony. You can find my most recent book, which is the supernatural detective thriller All Souls Lost, at any of your fine bookstores of choice online, including an audiobook, which came out just a couple weeks ago. So check that out. And I have a 4th installment of my Galactic Cold War series will be coming out later this year.
This is very exciting. This is cool. Well, you know, we all do many things, many hats in this network. And one of Tony's hats right now is figuring out the order of seals or determining answers. So this has been the Incomparable Vamp portion. I'll just mention, I'm going to be slightly gauche and just mention, I've got a book about comics history coming up, which I talk about. It's a heavily visually illustrated look at the production and reproduction of newspaper comics that you may know and love if you grew up in North America. And if you go to howcomicsweremade.inc, you can find out more about the book, which is going to Kickstarter soon, and sign up for a newsletter, free newsletter, about things. If you like stuff like weird printing molds and original art and visiting the Schultz Museum and Charles Schultz Museum, things like that, you'll find out more at the newsletter. This is our promotional / vamping section of the program. And now I'll turn to Tony, who I gave the horrible, horrible task of providing orders. How you doing, Tony? Everything okay?
I thought you said you were going to help me with this one.
I was helping you by giving you time. I don't know.
I see. That's what you think helped.
Let's reveal the correct order of seals. Let me say that 10 times fast, from heaviest to lightest, biggest to smallest. Elephant seal, which weighs in at an average of 1,300 to 4,400 pounds.
Makes sense. They're capable of eating an elephant.
So, that's right. Yep. That checks out. The Weddell seal is next, the one that nobody knew about. It weighs in an average of about 800 to 990 pounds.
Wow. Right in the middle, throwing off everybody's list.
Exactly. Yep. You thought, wow, it's a seal I haven't heard from. It must be very small. The leopard seal weighs up to about 840 pounds, coming in third. The harbor seal is a mere 180 to 285 pounds.
How does it eat a whole harbor when it's so small? Sense.
And then finally, the ring seal is just 110 to 150 pounds on average. And you can guess their lengths at this point. I'm sure you can work that out. Now, the elephant seal can be 10 to 13 feet long, where the ring seal is more like 4 to 4.5 feet long. I'm sad to say, Tony, did anybody get this correct?
As far as I can tell, I should check the audience members. I don't know if anyone got the got it correct. It seems like people were unsure about Weddell seals and leopard seals. I will say almost everybody, both panelists and audience, did have a hint that the elephant seal, pretty big. So elephant seal, popular first seal, or at the very least, second seal. None of the panelists got the entire sequence correct. Now, Glenn, I believe your scoring is going to suggest basically for getting sequences of that chain correct. Elephant, Weddell, leopard, harbor, rings.
I'm completely buggered then.
Yeah, I would say, unfortunately, the panelists.
Overall, I was pretty close, but yeah, not if you're going by order.
I misplaced pedal.
You did great, Anthony. The whole round was about ordering things.
But I got leopard and Weddell the wrong way around, and ringed and harbor the wrong way around.
So what was the final? What was the final from biggest to smallest?
Elephant, Weddell, leopard, harbor, and ringed. And you can use an acronym to remember that. If you can think of something that E-W-L-H-R would work out to as something you can remember, like Euler.
As one does.
Every woman loves hair replacement.
No, there we go. See, now you're done. That's it. I think the audience on average, they will look.
You did assign me the task of averaging lists, Glenn.
I know.
Here is my average list, which nobody is capable of checking the math on, which I really appreciate. My average list is elephant, leopard. So elephant, good. Leopard, eh. Weddell, eh. Ringed, and then ringed again.
I have some questions.
Many people put ringed at the fourth and fifth place.
I want to give the audience 1 point.
That seems exceptionally generous.
I think it's good. But then among panelists, we actually had correct pairs for 3 people got correct orders of two seals in a row. So unfortunately, Shelley had no correct pairs. So Annette's going to get 2 points and nobody else is going to get any points. So this is why this round is hated. Perhaps it will not appear in the next game. But we said that before. I said that last time.
Or it will appear all the time on the next game.
Tony, is it possible that you have numbers that relate to people's positions in the ranking of scoring? Ah, good. What would these be?
Well, assuming I've done any of this correctly, Annette has climbed forward. So Shelley's still in first place with 14. Annette and Dan battling it out with 11 points each. Anthony here at 6, doing the math on whether he will ever return for this show. Audience also present with 4 points.
Well, but here's the deal.
I'm really looking forward to this next round, which is nominally easier to score.
Well, here's also the thing. Tony actually likes this round that's coming up, so that's a good indication. And Tony actually...
This one is all my fault. This is his fault. I gave you the data set for this.
And I love it. Okay, so this is round 6. It's the final one-on-one round where I'm going to go through in two rounds with each panelist. So each panelist, I will ask your name in order determined earlier in the game by the BB Edit Sort Randomize feature. That's Shelly, Annette, Anthony, Dan is the order. And I will ask you a question and you will have to answer more or less to the question, all derived from the same spot. Now, the audience is also going to participate. They will be answering the question before the panelist does, so we can get their responses and tabulate them without the oral response of the panelist causing them to produce a different result. Here we go. Everyone's ready. We're going to go. So this is the topic area. So YouGov, a polling company, asked an extraordinary question. 1,224 U.S. adults, that's U.S. adults, were asked to choose which of two animals they thought would win in a fight in a series of head-to-head matchups. On each page, they saw two animals with the prompt, which animal do you think would win in a fight? Now, here's the thing. Humans are animals. So in some cases, they saw animals. In other cases, they saw a person and a non-human animal and were asked. And that is how they derived these results. So this is a question to people. It's not, could you win in a fight? But it's still the same question. You're a human. You identify with it. And so you see a picture of an animal. You say, could you beat this animal? Essentially is how people responded. If you believe these numbers, which were pretty insane. So here's the go. In the first go round, I'm going to ask each of you, Shelly, Annette, Anthony, Dan, Anthony and Dan, not one person, and the audience.
D'Antoni, please.
Anthony, please. I'm going to ask you if you thought more than 20% of men, that's men, believed they could beat an animal mano a mano. So you're answering, do you think more than 20% of men said they could beat this animal, or fewer than 20% of men thought they could beat this animal? So, Shelly.
Fewer than 20% of men thought they could beat the animal? Or
sorry, this is all humans against
all
animals.
All humans versus yeah. animals.
They okay. asked a bunch of got people, it. And then they filled.
And we are only using the data from the men.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, and then they split okay. it by men because and women. So men. This men is the, it's a feint. They asked people about a lot of animals and then included humans in there because they really wanted to know if we thought we could beat animals in a fair fight. So mm-hmm. I'm going to ask, let's start with this. Shelly, let me spell this out really carefully and don't answer until we have the audience responses in. We'll tell you when.
Oh, believe me, I'm not ready to answer at all.
Okay. So, Shelly, do you think more than 20% of men or fewer than 20% of men could beat a chimpanzee in a fight?
Thought they could beat a chimpanzee in a fight.
Right.
Yes. Important.
Yes. Well,
important.
Thought they could beat.
That is a different yeah. question.
Well, you're right. Well, they thought they could. That's right. Fewer, more or fewer than 20% of men said, oh, yeah, I could take a chimpanzee. Let's do it right now. Yeah, so Shelly, what do you know, as you think about this, do you think men are, more than 20% of men are confident that they could beat a chimpanzee in a one-on-one fight?
Why did you have to bring the word confident into this?
Well, you know, if you say yes, yep. I mean, they're not being asked. Actually,
I feel
even better.
Like every time the question is rolled out, it's a little bit different.
It's a little different. And-
yep.
Well, this is how this game is played. I was just picturing, like, they could have run this with having the actual animals in cages outside. Okay, you said you could beat it. Well, let's go. Let's go do it. Oh, wait.
I think that would make it worthwhile, then, wouldn't it?
That's right. It'd be great.
That's a reality show yeah, we want to see.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so
chimpanzees did not ask for that.
I think we're going to cut off audience answer at this point. We have a bunch of audience answers in.
Yeah.
So let's cut it off. Shelly, chimpanzee, more than 20% of men, less than 20% of men thought they could beat a chimpanzee when asked in a polling question.
More.
The answer is more. Correct. And also, the audience was correct. The average, I don't even need an average to look at this. One person thought less, but the average is 9.16. So the vast majority of the audience thought that that was correct. That answer was correct.
So 2 points to Shelly.
That's right. 2 points to Shelly. 1 point to the audience for
only
because
one point to
the panelist was correct. And so 22% of men said that a man versus a chimpanzee, the a man would win.
I'm amazed it was that low. Wow.
That's a lower number than I imagined. Uh-huh.
Well,
if you had said 30, I would still have said more, or yeah. 40 or 50.
Vicious. All right. So let's go on to Annette. Now we know how this game is played. First, the members will respond, and then you can give an answer. So Annette, a wolf, more than 20% of men or less than 20% of men think they could beat a wolf, think a man could beat a wolf in a fight. So listeners, please provide your answers. This is listeners, I'm sorry, members in the listeners, if you're listening at home to the podcast later, you can think about this.
Just
have a discussion with
you. Shout out at your phone.
We'll hear you. It's okay. We'll hear you. It'll
totally
go back
know.
In time.
Down
if you
future.
Shout loud enough, we will know. We will not be able to do anything with that information because this was all recorded
we'll
in the past.
We'll know.
But
so,
we'll know.
So what are you thinking about wolves? I mean, where do you think people rate wolves, Annette, in terms of like beatability?
Where do I personally and where do people, yeah, well, I think, might be? different.
Annette, you're not deluded, i.e. not a man, and thus you might not score at the same level as... Sorry. So, all right, we think we have the audience answers in. We have an average. And so, Annette, do you think more than 20% of men or less than 20% of men think they could beat a wolf?
I just think that men are confident.
Think about men in your life. Yep.
And I think it's just the answer is always going to be more.
Shockingly, only 16% of men surveyed said a man could beat a wolf. So I'm sorry, that answer is incorrect. But Tony, it looks to me like the audience was also...
The audience also not as confident. I mean, we're not talking chimpanzee numbers here, but by my count, 57% of the audience thinks that they don't think that they could beat a wolf. They think that men think that they could beat a wolf. Just to clarify, our audience are very intelligent people. Yes. I am totally confident in the audience's assessment of their own abilities to beat a wolf.
Listeners,
that is a separate game show. Can you beat a wolf or not?
Do more or less than 20% of them think they could beat Scott Wolf?
Mm. Oh, I could probably.
He's small. He's very small.
Listeners, please don't try to beat a wolf. You can eat a wolf. You can't beat a wolf.
Don't eat a wolf either.
Well, I guess that's illegal in most countries. All right, let's move on.
So no points to that. No points to the audience.
Yeah, all right. But, that's right. So
but we're learning here. We've got 22% is your high for chimpanzee, 16% for wolf, an interesting 8% in there. 6% are in their kind of range, right?
So yeah, we're getting there. So here's
we are truly learning about ourselves and men.
All right, Anthony, here's your question. A king cobra, do you think that more than 20% of men or less than 20% of men believed they could beat a king cobra in a fight?
God, give me the difficult one, won't you?
Yeah,
I think the mere fact that 16% of men still thought that a human could beat a wolf is indicative, I think, of like men's delusion.
They're all sitting there like, am I armed? Do I have traps?
No, you're not armed. It's like it's mano a mano.
It is a fair fight.
Person-to-person
by the wolf versus men fighting competition.
I think these numbers are actually deflated because they're showing a person on screen. I think if the question was, do you think you could beat this animal in a fight? These percentages would be a lot higher because I think
that's
far
really
too many people
question.
Would well overestimate their own abilities, but they see somebody else and they go, oh, well, they probably couldn't.
I think only 16% of men know what a wolf looks like. They're thinking of like a golden retriever that's gray.
Or how big a wolf is, yes.
Just to give you a detail, 71% of men think they could beat a goose in a fight, and I think that's wildly optimistic. Yeah. Looking at a picture of a man and a goose. Only 51% of women, though.
Canadian geese are evil.
All right, so let's say we have the answers in from the audience. So
we do.
Anthony, king cobra, do you think more than 20% of men or less than 20% of men think they can beat a king cobra?
This is a tough one. I would have got the previous two right, but I think king cobra, I think if it was like, if you'd said, boa constrictor or python or something, it would probably be less, but I'm going to say more here.
You are correct. It is more. 23% of men think they could defeat a king cobra. Only 8% of women. Interesting.
Yeah, that's because the women are smart.
Yeah, because it's a king cobra.
I'd like to meet those women, though. I mean,
92% of women are smart.
Cobras. Do you know how bad that is?
Yeah. I believe the 8% of women, though. I think 8% said yes. I think those 8% could kill a king or defeat a king cobra. But it's a notable outlier.
Women who actually work in reptile houses. I mean, king cobras, they're huge, they're fast, and they growl. Have you ever heard a king
to
cobra
be fair,
growl?
Cobra Ann is really pulling off the numbers.
Cobra Georgina. The audience, Tony, how did the audience do on this one?
The audience also thought more. The audience continues to have a certain viewpoint of men. So I believe the audience gets one more point for that.
Yes, that's correct. They get one more point, and Anthony gets 2 points. Whopping 2 points.
So I will tell you, the audience, this is an exciting round for the audience because they, every time, a panelist has a chance to get points, the audience collectively has a chance to get points. And the audience are now at 2 points for the round, right?
That's how every round works.
No, but the audience, for example, could potentially get...
Oh, they score... right, yeah, no,
yeah,
I see
they
what you're
get,
saying.
They
yeah,
can
yeah,
get,
yeah.
They could accumulate eight...
The audience, they're not
they
going
eight
to,
points.
But they could walk away with 8 points. They're not going to.
Yeah.
All right, this is what I'm real excited for.
No, they could actually walk away with 16 if every panelist were wrong and the audience were right.
That's okay.
That's spiders. That's a answers Georg. My mistake. Okay, so this is the theme. Kangaroo is the next up on the agenda for Dan. Dan, do you think Do you think more than 20% or less than 20% of men, when viewing a picture of a kangaroo and a man, said, yeah, I could take that kangaroo? What do you think?
Quick question. Is this like, is it a boxing match? What are the rules?
What kind of kangaroo? There's many kinds of kangaroos.
Can they use their feet?
Red kangaroo?
You people keep asking questions and we do not have the answers.
Have you watched the documentary Kangaroo Joe? This will help you answer the question. In no,
that is not the name of that movie.
No,
Kangaroo Jack? Jack? Is that what you're saying? They must be kangaroos. They must be kangaroos.
We're hitting
the big
the,
red kangaroo.
The point of Glenn Meltdown, so you understand what's going on.
I've given this a lot of careful thought in the over the years.
Audience, we're very fast this time.
Yeah. Also, an important question. When you say they were shown a picture of a person and then a picture of the animal, was that person Crocodile Dundee?
They're shown, yes, Paul Hogan. If it's Paul Hogan, everything
we all
would
agree
be...
Paul Hogan could take him.
Did we mention that the person was in like a mecha battle suit?
That's right.
Context is important.
All right, so this is the question, Dan, for potentially 2 points for you. Kangaroo, do more than 20% or less than 20% of men think they could beat a kangaroo in a one-on-one
fight?
Just
going through what we've learned so far, more men thought they could beat a chimp. Fewer men thought they could beat a wolf. More men thought they could beat a cobra.
Right.
Boy, this is a lot of real mixed messages here.
You know, man, what are we going to do about
it? I don't, yeah. Can't kill
them.
I'm going to go with more than 20% of men thought they could beat a kangaroo.
I'm sorry to tell you, there was a slight amount of rationality. It was only 17%. 11% of women, 17% of men.
17% is still insane.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Even looking at a picture of a generic man.
We're not arguing about sanity or insanity, Anthony, just the magnitude of insanity.
Mm-hmm. So just to, and I apologize, audience, unfortunately, again, all had ideas about men and thought most men would be able to, more men would be able to take care of a kangaroo, and only 17% of men are delusional. But just to reflect on our four data points here so far, Glenn, in case this helped people with the next round, in order of perceived lethality, we've got wolf 16%, kangaroo 17%, chimpanzee 22%, king cobra 23%. Very concerned about these people who think a king cobra is less lethal than a chimpanzee.
They're like, well, it doesn't have any arms, does it?
No. It doesn't have.
It does have poison, doesn't it?
Yes.
Venom, yeah. Yes. It does.
I'm not endorsing this.
It doesn't have to be hard.
Venom that it delivers via its fangs.
Yes.
I'm going to point out, here's one that we didn't go. It's not going to include in the next round, but I thought it was interesting. Ranges is just for comparison. A large dog, not the medium-sized dog we discussed earlier, in a large dog, 31% of men think they could beat a large dog if they were unarmed. But only 15% of women thought they could beat a large dog.
31% thought they could beat a large dog, but only 16% thought they could beat a wolf. Let me tell you.
I'm just like,
I don't know how good these people
totally
are at science.
Totally different.
It's pretty amazing. All right, so we're down to the final go-round. Tony, we will do a score review only at the end when we're done to see if there's a tie. I have a tie break question if necessary. So in this next round, we're getting even tighter. We're going to make this even harder because it's been so easy so far. So we're down to determining whether more or less than 8% of men have the idea they could beat the following. So now I know we're getting into sort of random territory, but there is some reasoning that could be involved.
We're getting into your very dangerous animals at this stage.
Every single answer so far has been more than 8%, so I'm dying to know what these animals are.
Oh, you'll be good. You're going to love this. You're going to love this.
A list of seals.
All right, so the Weddell seal, which weighs an average of... If you were,
which we didn't know until a couple of rounds ago.
Name for its first victim, James Weddell.
Call it the Weddell.
Hey, what's that? Were his final words.
That'd be amazing way to name animals.
Name that seal after me.
Cool.
All right. Remember so, Shelly, your question is
too.
An elephant. An elephant. This is going to get wild. All right.
What?
An elephant. An elephant. I'm not kidding. So
8%
of men. So let the audience answer here first, but just think about it.
Is it more than
8% of men think they could beat, the language shown in the poll for the final answers is exactly this. They think you could beat in a fight if you were unarmed. So it's more than 8% or less than 8% think they could beat an elephant in an unarmed fight. The elephant is not grabbing a branch with his trunk. The human has no gun.
But the human does have a branch.
Elephant has a gun. And
the human has a branch. The human has two branches. Yeah,
that's
right.
I want to see that poll result. I think we almost have the answers in from the audience. From the audience. I mean, just how misguided are men? We're going to find out. And it's, I mean, the divides, I will tell you, the divides narrow pretty tightly when you get down to the most dangerous animals to a surprising degree. When you get to the slightly less dangerous, smaller ones, there's a much broader gender gap in the polling.
Is this a European or an Asian elephant?
Unrelated swallow?
Quick question. Yes. A European elephant?
Yeah, African. African elephant.
Those would be extinct.
African or Indian.
A Thames.
Well, that's because the men beat them all up.
You could take my nonsense question and I just call it.
Maybe picture an elephant in a beret with a mustache.
This is the bar, Dan.
Oh my god. All right, so Shelly, let's give us your answer. Do you think that more or less than 8% of men think they can defeat an elephant in a fight?
I'm gonna go with less.
I am so sorry to tell you that 9% of men, 9% of men, but 8% of women, 9% of men, 8% of women can beat an elephant in a fight. Isn't that crazy? I don't know what it is. And Tony, what's the average there? We got the audience.
Have they seen an elephant?
I mean, this goes a long way to explaining election results.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, I think.
Yeah, they vote for the Republicans because they're like, I could take an elephant.
I think the audience, the audience was very heavy on more in the last round. And I think they're trying to readjust, and they went less, but we know the answer.
Oh, whopping no points to the audience. Yeah, this poll, it resonated very hard during the pandemic because you're like, people. All right, well, Annette, now we're on to grizzly bear. See, this one, they specify the actual bear variety. Grizzly bear.
Oh, that's good.
More than 8% or less than 8% of men believe they could beat a grizzly bear in a fight. You have grizzly bears in Edmonton? You don't, right?
No, but I do live near the Rocky Mountains where we have grizzly bears, and I have seen grizzly bears.
They're kind of scary.
Also, yeah. Black bears and brown bears. I pet a brown bear. Did because you? We have a very unethical zoo that you should not be in a place where you pet brown bears. It was like a little baby brown bear, and it was like a little puppy, and it was adorable, and I still don't know that I could beat that little adorable
puzzle. Do they have the thing where they tie the otters together and they pull you around in the water like you're sledding?
No. I made that up.
I'm thinking the most unethical thing a zoo could do. Maybe that's too unethical.
Nobody is going to pay you money for your otter chariot races. I don't know.
Maybe if it was a Weddell seal, it would be different.
I think there's about 7% of men that would.
I want to ride a narwhal. Come on. Is that so much to ask? Okay, so grizzly bear, Annette, 8% of men, more or less than 8%, believe they could beat a grizzly bear in an unarmed fight.
I don't have a lot of faith that this is the correct answer, but because of the wolf, because there's like teeth and claws, and I think like you'd have this more visceral reaction based on previous reactions or answers, I think I'm going to say less.
You are correct. And you get 2 points. Wow. The audience also, most of the audience, the average is 1.6 from the audience. Most of the audience agree with you, so they get 1 point.
I think that might be a case where most of the men who think they might be able to take a grizzly are the sort of men who have then watched that movie about a guy who fought grizzlies.
Right. Right.
Maybe not.
It's like they're scary.
A little less than an elephant.
I thought you were going to say most of them have died as a result of trying to kill grizzlies. Yeah,
so that's right. But that's they think they can beat a brown bear, probably.
Oh, my God. Yeah, brown
totally
bear.
Totally smaller. Sure. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Very small. Just fight a panda bear with bamboo sticks or something.
And would still beat the hell out of a human.
All right. So,
sure.
Anthony, speaking of beating the hell out of humans, we're on to a gorilla. More than 8% of men believe, or less than 8% of men believe, they could beat a gorilla in an unarmed fight. I mean, I'm trying to think like elephant, grizzly bear, gorilla. Like, how do you rank those in terms
of
my
favorite Monkey Ninja Cowboy variant?
Yeah. I saw that movie. I suspect, so my reasoning here is that most people are aware of how big a gorilla is, and because it's another primate, there's maybe a little bit more respect for it as a fighter. I'm just trying to sort of put myself in the mindset of these insane people who think they might be able to beat a wild animal.
I think a lot of people have gone to the unethical zoo where the gorilla cradles them and carries them around the enclosure for a while, so they're well aware of the signs. The Unethical Zoo is a good episode title too, or band name.
That sounds like a Mothership episode in waiting.
Anthony, listener answers are in, so you can provide your response. More than 8% or less than 8% of men think they can take on and beat a gorilla.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm going to say less, just because most people are aware of how big and strong gorillas are.
Tony, I believe we have a split decision. Can you provide
We have a split decision because the audience thought it would be more. Anthony thought it would be less. The answer is, sadly for humanity, more.
9%
of men think they can fight a gorilla. No, sorry. They could win a fight with a gorilla. Anyone could fight a gorilla.
8% of women. But again, I think the women, I'm going to believe the women in this case, not the men. If 8% said they can, I'm like...
Which is really mainly an indictment of the American educational system, because my feeling here is that at least half of those 9% are not entirely familiar with what a gorilla is.
I also feel like it is weird of us to be very like... You know, whenever it's more, we're like, oh, no, 9%. That's insane. They're like, oh, phew, only 7%. Only 7%.
We're not different enough. I wonder how many of those 7% of women were actually men who just accidentally tipped woman on the floor.
In the error margin, yeah.
All of these people vote. So,
They're stupid enough to say yes, so they're stupid enough to accidentally put the wrong gender on a form.
It's what percentage of men believe they could stage an insurrection successfully against them. Oh no, wait, that's a different poll.
Anthony gets 0 points, but the audience gets two.
First divergence.
Two. Incredible.
First divergence. All right, this is the last question. Then we're going to check scores to see if there's a tie or we have a clear winner. The last question is to Dan. Dan, a lion.
Hello.
A lion. Do you think that more or less than 8% of men believe they could beat a lion in an unarmed fight?
All right. Well, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers, and so
mauled by a lion is literally a phrase. Right.
That's for losers.
That's a challenge more than a phrase.
They think they're sitting there thinking like, oh, it's got that head of hair. I can just like grab that; it'll be totally immobile. That's nice.
I think there's a lot of people that think that like adrenaline will kick in, and they are forgetting that like. You know what adrenaline is great for is running away.
Yeah, really good for
like
that.
They just have in their head that like I will take this branch and I will fashion it into a machete and I will take that goose, and it's like no, run from that goose.
Also, many animals actually kill for food. Which we
yes,
don't
every
tend
day.
To do.
Every
they also
day.
Have yeah. adrenaline.
Yeah, right? you don't kill animals for food. You might go to McDonald's. That's not as good as you can get.
I'll kill that burger.
I don't think you could take Grimace in a fight. Let me put it that way.
Grimace.
Oddly enough, the highest killer of humans, as we know, is mosquitoes. And mosquitoes are not on this list. I don't think anyone can take a mosquito in a fight.
Cows and hippopotami are up there, too.
I've taken a mosquito.
Hippopotamuses are up there, too.
Well, the thing with the mosquitoes is the mosquitoes play a long game, right?
That's
I mean,
right.
Mosquitoes... Yeah. They're okay with a Pyrrhic victory.
I think hippos kill a surprising number of people. I don't know whether they put them up there with mosquitoes.
Unless faster than you think, aren't they not?
Unless there are herds of hippos roaming the world, killing thousands of people.
Well, have you been on Jungle Cruise at Disney World?
Anthony, for no points, how many people you think hippos kill a year?
200.
You are off by a factor 500 deaths per year. Exactly 500. They exactly. Stop at that.
Still not thousands.
Oh man,
I've killed enough.
You don't want to
go
there.
Have I made my point yet?
You know me walking in, and they're like, "Oh, 499 people have been killed by hippos this year." Oh no, that's bad news, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many people do you think are killed by lions each year, Anthony?
Oh, a lot less because people aren't so stupid to go anywhere near them.
Yep. All right.
I like the logic by that same idea that like the 501st person to go after a hippo is like, well, I'm safe
now. Yeah. I've got a quota. Yeah.
That's right. That hippo hit its limit.
The hippo government is strict.
Listen, they're only so hungry and then they're stopped.
Also, lion populations are not exactly plentiful in many places.
It's true.
Yeah, whereas I got hippos all over the place.
They're fast, though. Yeah, hippos are shockingly fast.
Don't mess with hippos. They're real dangerous.
And huge.
So, Dan, a lion, do more or less than 8% of men think they could beat an unarmed lion when they are themselves also unarmed.
I'm going by the sort of rubric that things with fur and claws have that sort of evoke some sort of rationality in people. And so I'm going to say fewer than 8% think they could beat a lion.
And you would be correct. It is, in fact, and the audience also correct. So you get 2 points. The audience gets one. This is the one category. Now, there is a margin of error, but it is the one category in which more women think they could beat a lion than men. What? It was 8% of women, 7% of men, and I think that is with the within the error bar, one must believe.
But Lion Shelley has started those numbers off.
Yeah, so. It's these numbers are depressing and astonishing. the good one is, though, this is the one I like, is percentage of all U.S. adults who think they can beat a house cat, 69%. And I'm like, well, that's fast. So there are 31% of people. 31% of people are like, I can't beat a house cat. That would be ridiculous.
Well, I couldn't bring myself to do it.
I'm covered in scars all the time from my loving cat.
I was going to say, also, the other people, they all own house cats and they're like afraid.
My wife once got into a disagreement with a house cat and she ended up barricaded in a room.
Oh, no. Yeah. So they're rational about cats, not about lions. Possibly because they encounter cats more. So that's the thing. The other good one is eagle. 30% of Americans think they could beat an eagle. And I'm like, you are out of your... I mean, that's worse than gorilla. Like, an eagle? Have you seen an eagle?
Eagles. Those are the national symbol.
You should just...
That is one of the ones where the men and women is very divergent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's 38% of men and 23% of women.
We don't ask the percentage of people who are like, why am I fighting an eagle?
There are bigger questions at work here.
One of my original theories about this is that people seeing them on the screen were always going to think they could beat something that is physically smaller than them.
It's true.
Mm. And that's why I missed the elephant question, because I think...
You thought the elephant was very far away?
That's right. No, I thought whoever it was that said the teeth and claws thing is right, though. So if I'm wrong about that, if a person is next to an elephant is far larger, the person still thinks they can beat the elephant because the elephant doesn't have, except for those really large tusks, doesn't have any apparent...
Or like trunk hands, little feet. Just like it stomps on
you. Did you know?
Right.
And also, when I've been to Africa, and our guide would, towards the end of the trip, not at the beginning, he'd tell us the stories, but he's like, an elephant can actually flip the vehicle, the van.
Sure.
Yeah. Just like they walk by huge. And he's seen it. Just Noah unprovoked.
Yep. Yep. To be fair, 25% of men think they could take a van in a fight.
Also, all those giraffes you saw, they have guns.
Yeah.
Tony, I think we've reached the end of this particular charade of a game.
Oh, I hope so.
Dear Lord, is it over? Tony, what is our final score update? Do we have a tie for first place or an outright winner?
We do not have a tie for first place, but Shelley, a commanding victory with 16 points. Shelley is,
I think I can beat all of you in a fight.
Basically everything except ranking seals. And, none of us is great at ranking seals.
It's true.
So Shelley, 16 points. Annette and Dan are tied for second place at 13 points. Behind them, audience, 10 points. And right behind them, collectively, Anthony at 8 points. And this has been inestimable.
I'm going to say that Anthony was thrown off by the Mars bar question, because, of course, that would, and also the measure of American house sizes. But, thank you so much for playing. If you'd like to become a member of The Incomparable in order to be in the audience to play future iterations of this game, I would be surprised. But if in unlikely event you would, go to theincomparable.com/members to find out all about the member benefits, like listening to shows as soon as they're recorded, ad-free episodes of our Incomparable Mothership podcast, and more. Thank you to Annette, Anthony, Dan, and Shelley, and of course, scorekeeper Tony. I couldn't do it without you, Tony, which is why I lock you in your room after each episode.
It's fair.
I'm your host, Glenn Fleischman. You can reach me at pants@theincomparable.com. Tony?
Tune in next time.